RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 136 with guest Clint Huffman, recorded Sunday, November 1st, 2009. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everyone. Richard, how are you again?
Sir, things are good, as always. And presumably, by the time this show is published, I will actually be back home after pretty much 10 weeks of continuous conference travel.
That is just absolutely and completely insane.
It's the fall season, man, and I'm sure I had a great time. I know when we were recording this, I was about halfway through it and having a good time.
So, Richard, how was the conference season?
It was awesome, man. Thanks for asking.
Really? Where'd you just get back from?
I'm doing the math. I'm doing that radio math in my head right now. I just got back from PDC.
Oh, really? And how was it? What happened to PDC this year?
It totally rocked, man. now you're just making fun of me.
Well, I'm laughing with you, though, not... Okay, I'm making fun of you.
You're making fun of me.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hey, let's introduce our guest. We've got a really exciting show today. Well, he's been on before, so I don't know. I'm not even going to do the whole bio. It's Clint Huffman, one of the guys who led us to the premier field engineers, who I think are, without a doubt, the smartest guys at Microsoft.
Yeah, truly awesome. Great, great resources.
Thanks, guys. we're definitely not the smartest folks, but we definitely we're a little humble in that case, but we definitely like to help people out. So,
well, and I think a lot of people don't know that PFE even exists, that you are the folks that actually go out into the field for the large Microsoft customers and make stuff work.
Yeah. The way I kind of put it is, we're just as good quality as the folks you call into and work with, except that we're face to face with you, and we actually give that face to face hand, and we actually say, "Look, let's actually look at your server, see what's going on, and then see if we can actually solve this out for you," and versus trying to do it all over the phone and remotely and everything. So.
When you get in big, complicated enterprise scenarios like you deal with, and there's so many variables and so many different possibilities of what could impact this or what could impact that, and domino effects of different things, and a cause may not be directly connected. It must be a really interesting job. I imagine you're constantly seeing something different every time.
That's what's so fun about it, because and here lately I've been trying to blog, at least like do detailed blogs about each of these cases that I run into, and it's almost like a mystery series.
Yeah.
Because I actually talked about doing that blog series last time I was on the show, and since then I've actually done it. And so I have about, 9 posts that I've done since the show about all the different customers I've gone on site with. And basically, started off as, it all started with a dark and stormy night, So,
yeah.
What are the symptoms, who are the usual suspects, what was the clues that we ran into, and, what was the red herring, and then when all said and done, it was scarlet with the lead pipe, all at the end, here was the evidence that led up to that. So,
well, I've done this sort of work in diagnosing performance problems in websites and stuff. But for folks who've not seen this blog, it's at blogs.technet.com/ClintH. And the current posting at this point, I love the line, "The case of the 2 million context switches."
Yeah. And it's so true, too. I mean, I've got the Perfmon log to prove it and everything.
Yeah. you hang on to your best Perfmon logs, like the craziest things you've ever seen?
Yeah, I do. And I actually show them in class. Because I teach the Vital Signs Workshop, which is a class right. That any of our customers can ask for. And in that class, I'm always like, hey, let's cover the last few cases I've gone into and actually see what happened, what led up to it and what we did to solve those problems.
Maybe we should try to save a few minutes at the end of the show here to go back and talk about some of the stories. But one of the things that we wanted to address, today with you is last time we were on, we talked about the PAL tool, and there's a new version that's available.
Yeah, yeah, I'm really excited about this version. I've actually poured pretty much all of my free time in the past year, since January of this year. It's now October now, at least with the time shift and everything, probably be a little later. But yeah, I mean, it's all my free time in the past year I've been working on this tool. And I mean, a lot of people have hobbies, like they might collect stamps or they might build models and stuff like that. Well, this is my hobby, is to create tools like this. And so I'm proud to say that we're going to release a beta version of it. Probably by the time this show releases, you'll actually be up on the web and everything there. So, but it'll be on pal.codeplex.com. So pal.codeplex.com is where the website's at. Now, it won't be the default release. It'll be, you go to downloads, and then on the right-hand side, you look for the beta version of PAL 2.0 and just download the latest.
For the uninitiated or the people that didn't hear the last show or that have forgotten, what is PAL? Why don't we start there?
All right, so PAL is basically the result of a time-saving tool that I wrote. Effectively, what the problem that I was running up against was I was teaching performance analysis to customers, and customers are like, wow, this is great stuff, but you know, I've got a day job and I've got plenty of stuff I got to work on, and you're telling me that for the 200 servers that I own that I need to do this kind of detailed time-consuming analysis on all my servers and still do my day job. And so, you know, I was saying, well, yeah, you got, you know, performance analysis is like Seattle traffic in the way that you can get where you're going to. You just got to put time and effort into doing it.
Right.
So, you know.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah, that's the way I like putting it. I mean, performance analysis can be done. It's just time and energy, right? So anyway, I wrote the, and I was running into this myself where I kept finding myself repeating a lot of analysis. Like a person, like they would give me 10 perfmon logs, these VLG files, and say, hey, Clint, can you have these analyzed by tomorrow? And I'm like, no, it'll take me a week to do this. You know, do you realize how much effort goes into the analysis here to do it properly? And so that's why I wrote the tool. And the tool is, I tried to make it as simple as possible. And what I mean by simple as possible is you just feed it a performance monitor log, and then you answer a few simple questions. You know, how many processors were on the machine? Is it a 32-bit or 64-bit machine? Are you running 3GB? Things like that, because all of those are variables in the tool itself. So if you say you only have one processor, then it's going to change the way that the analyses are done, because those are literally variables in those thresholds and such. So you have to be, so just like when you're talking to your doctor, if you know, have you been smoking lately and stuff like that, you need to answer truthfully about that. That way the doctor can properly analyze your computer in this case.
And I think the big thing here is that, and I get this experience as a consultant, is most people don't know what normal looks like. You've got perfmon, yeah, and you've got all these great numbers, but you're like, okay, I see these numbers. Are they good or bad?
Oh, yeah, and I've seen it all. I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Right.
So I know what good looks like on certain hardware, and I know what bad really looks like. So last week, I went on site with a customer, and I was looking at their performance amount. It was a BizTalk server hitting a back-end SQL server, and they're running why it's running so slow. And, of course, that's what I do, you know. So I did a perfmon log on the BizTalk servers, and BizTalk servers are happy, and all the resources look idle and normal. So I thought, well, that's obviously not the problem. So looked at the backend SQL server, and sure enough, their disk I/O was coming back within about 100 to 200 milliseconds, when it should be, you know, under 10 milliseconds on average with all those disk I/Os. You know, so that was a kind of like the low-hanging fruit, an elephant in the room type of thing. I'm like, yeah, that's going to be your problem.
Right, yeah, that wouldn't be right. That's bad, what you're seeing there.
Yeah, that's another case of the SAN being oversaturated. They just carve out this huge, one big RAID 5, throw everything on it, you know, in the kitchen sink. I don't know who else is using the SAN, you know. Then it's like, why is it so slow, you know? And I tell people, like, you know what? If I plug in my USB drive, my 5400 RPM USB drive, it's going to run a lot faster than your SAN.
Right.
Yeah, I've described exactly the same scenario with a group of guys on an OLAP cube, and what they've done is mapped two drive volumes to the same set of spindles, and we're copying between them. And wondering why they were having performance problems. And, you understand that I can, a hard drive by itself would be faster than that.
Yes. But then the floppy drive, you gotta put the floppy drive speeds in there, you know, around 300 milliseconds is one of the fastest floppy drives out there.
That's, now you're just being mean to them. I could buy a $30 floppy drive and outrun your $250,000 SAN.
Yep, yep. Well, SANs are there to help optimize capacity, right, not performance. So
yeah, you have to work to get good performance out of a SAN.
Yes, yeah. If configured properly, the whole thing is, I don't want to beat up the SAN administrators because they know their job. That's what they do. What I say is, look, you know, BizTalk requires this many IOs per second.
Yep.
It requires this kind of response times. And it requires these kind of size of IO. You know, now granted, the 100 millisecond response times could have been okay if they're doing like 2 megabyte IOs,
right?
You know, or something huge like that. But in this case, they're only doing 16k IOs on average, so it should have been flying with that.
Ouch. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Let's retract back on PAL.
And like I said, you've now done the hard work of actually getting the sort of asking the teams what normal numbers look like.
Right. So now I sent you guys a link with a sample report. Are you guys able to open that or see that? I'm going to post this sample report up on the Powell website when it's actually up. Did you guys take a look at that yet?
Yeah. I've got it. It's sort of comparing reports between version 1 and version 2.
Right. And I wanted to show you some of the difference there. And one of the best difference that I like in any case is the visual thresholds in the charts. So in PAL version 1.x, one thing it did well was it charted the counters for you and gave you a nice chart and stuff like that. But one thing that it didn't do so well was that it actually charted the aggregates of each time slice.
Right.
So PAL gets all the data there and it separates it out like 30 different time slices by default. And so it charts the averages of each of those time slices. So if available megabytes, which is the amount of RAM that's available to the system, goes down to 3 megabytes, it wouldn't show that. It would show something like 100 megabytes because it actually averages all the data points in that entire time range.
Gotcha.
Of that time slice. And so people were saying, well, it looks like PAL is inaccurate. Well, it is accurate. It's just averaging the values and you don't quite see it. So in PAL 2.0, I made it an effort to plot every single value on the charts. And that's one of the big things with it now, that you can actually visually see everything now.
Right.
The other big thing is I've added thresholds to visual thresholds, like a warning range and a critical range of when the counters are actually bad. That way you can visually see without a doubt, oh, this counter is deep into the red, so it must be really bad. You know, so you can visually see that on PAL.
Those are cool. It's like a colored, kind of like a colored legend background to each of the graphs.
Yeah, and I added the little legend there with criticals and warnings. I also did dash and dash dots to distinguish separate counters a little bit easier now.
And I appreciate the sort of breakdown that, look, here are things that are good, here are things that are questionable, here are things that are bad. And showing the range of numbers and actually the much better descriptions than you get in Perfmon, saying, hey, look, if your read time on a logical disk is over 25 milliseconds, that's bad. I think most people don't have that basic fact of that's what a bad number looks like.
True. That's 80% rule, of course. And we do say that, you know, if it's above 25 milliseconds, then look at the IO sizes. But that's a lot of times going too far for most folks, so that's why we have the general rule of thumb of 25 milliseconds.
Right. Like I said, the problem is that all these things depend. The main thing is just pulling up the idea that if you're over this, this is something to look at and know why it's that high.
Right, and this is the 80% rule, by all means. And this is why, the Windows product team has been really skittish about, you know, drawing a line in the sand, because there are so many things that depend on the environment and the conditions and stuff like that, that they really don't want to draw that line in the sand to say this is how it is. you know, and you know, I'm like, well, can we do an 80% rule or something like that? And they're really, really hard pressed not to, because they don't want to get like sued, you know, for anything like that. So it really comes down to, you know, a third party or free tool like this to really to say, look, 80% of the time, this is going to be right. But, you know, take it with a grain of salt, obviously. And this is why it's, that's why I call it a time saving device, not a replacement for performance analysis.
Right. It's what you're really doing here is highlighting places to look.
Correct. That you, if you're getting a lot of red in disk I/O, then that means you need to spend some time learning about disk performance and learning how to troubleshoot disk performance and going into the actual Perfmon log and actually analyzing and seeing for real, is this what's really going on?
I remember for the 1X version, there was quite a few moving parts to making PAL work. You needed log parser, Office Web Components. What's it like for 2.0? Are we still using the same tools?
Oh, that's all gone now.
Really?
I'm proud to say, yes. I'm using pure PowerShell to generate this. The only add-on that you have to put on this is the Microsoft Chart Controls, which are part of the .NET Framework 3.5. Well, an initial download for the .NET Framework 3.5.
Cool. So, I mean, that's it. It's a lot less painful. And is this just proof of how great PowerShell is?
Yeah. Yeah. I was amazed because, I mean, when I first, Bruce Payette did our introduction to PowerShell, and I didn't realize that he was actually one of the dev leads of it and architects of it. But, you know, after I started asking, well, can PowerShell do this? Okay. Well, PowerShell can it do that? And really, really expecting him to say, well, no, or we're working on it or something like that. But every answer he replied with was, yes, we can do that. Yes, you can do that. Here's the functions and command lists that you need to use. And I'm like, holy cow, I think I can do this.
Cool.
It's impressive, really.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a recognition now that this is a better instrumentation. Now, are we still using Perfmon data, or are we using newer kinds of WMI metrics and things?
Oh, we're still using Perfmon. We're still based on the BLG Perfmon logs themselves. We're still analyzing those. And I still convert them from a BLG binary format to a CSV using the Relog EXE, which is part of the operating system. So this means that if you get a Perfmon log from, say, a Windows Server 2008 server, that you need to run the PAL tool, or at least the PowerShell version of this tool, on a Windows Vista or above machine in order to convert that VLG to the CSV format. So PAL 2.0 is really targeted for, really Windows 7 and 2008 Server R2 is really what it's targeting for, but it should run just fine on Vista and above.
And of course, Vista was the big leap forward, I think, for Perfmon, where the tool itself got way better.
Oh, it did, yeah. It was much easier to use, right-click auto-scale, definitely some nice features in Perfmon.
All right. Of course, this all starts with getting a good Perfmon log. What sort of instrumentation do I need to turn on in Perfmon to, you know, do you give me some help here of what I should be measuring?
Well, PAL 1.0 has the ability to export a PAL threshold file into a Perfmon log template, so like an HTM file. And then you can take that Perfmon log template and then run it on a Windows 2003 machine and get your Perfmon log. That way, you know, you're optimizing the amount of analysis that PAL can do by gathering all the counters that it has. In this case, though, I don't have a threshold file for Server 2008 just yet. That's one of the things on my to-do list for PAL 2.0. And that's why I'm kind of throwing it out there as a kind of a beta version right now, because it's still in development right now. The core engine is useful and can be used right now, but I'm still adding on features like that. And the XML schema used in Server 2008 Perfmon log templates is still, tricky for me.
Right. And tough to actually handle all of that. So what are you going to do about getting a 2008 set of data? Do you go to the team for that, or is that based on your experience?
Well, for now, just gather the base operating system counters, you know, disk, you know, logical disk, physical disk, processor, system, network interface, memory, process, and am I leaving out anything? I think that's about it. The core operating system counters, just like you did in PAL 1X. So you have to still gather the perfmon log manually right now until I can automate that a little bit better.
Right.
And furthermore, go ahead.
No, and I can see that ultimately the goal here is actually to have the tool just go, okay, what's the server I'm going to monitor here? Off I go, set it up myself, pull down a stream, and then start doing analysis on it.
Right, yeah, it just matches up counters based on the threshold file to the perfmon log itself. The other thing, too, is that we're at command line only with the PAL 2.0, meaning it's a PowerShell. You have to bring up a PowerShell. You have to actually type in all the input for it right now. The engine is the only thing working right now in the PowerShell script. So the GUI version, like the Windows interface and wizard and stuff like that, is not ready yet. And I'll probably release that in maybe a 2.1 release later on, maybe later this year or early next year.
Awesome. Yeah. And already I started to paint a picture of what a version 3 would look like, but that's just me.
Oh, I know. I've had a lot of requests for, hey, can you have the user interface go out and create the perfmon logs for me remotely? And we certainly have that capability. I mean, logman.exe, a command line interface, allows you to do that kind of stuff. So
sure.
It's just a matter of, you know, coding for this and adding on to it. And if there's anybody, it's an open source project, so if there's anybody out there who wants to take on that project, let me know. So it's right now I've been kind of writing it all myself, a little bit of help from folks here and there. So,
I mean, you really created this tool because you needed it.
Right.
Maybe you could tell us some of the things that you found using PAL to help diagnose these logs.
Well, the blog entries I have up there definitely tell the story, and I also try to show off the PAL charts in every one of the cases I do. So it's definitely a fun challenge with that.
You know, it'd be pretty cool that, you know, you mentioned that you've been blogging some stories. Yeah, maybe this is a good chance to sort of jump back to that and tell us what some of your real world experience is.
Yeah, so I'm still getting into 32-bit kernel issues, and it just seems to be plaguing the industry until people can finally get off 32-bit. 32-bits was designed back in the, like, you know, was really needed back in the 386 days, you know, and NT4 days, you know. But, you know, now that we have more physical RAM than we have, you know, virtual address space, you got to get off of that. So, and it just kills the kernel, especially when you use 3GB. These past few months, I've seen, again, lots of PTE issues where we're just running out of the page table entries. For those who don't know page table entries, they are the basically the pointer from virtual memory to physical memory, that interaction there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you run, it's kind of like the accountant's paper. You know, if the accountant runs out of paper, they can't do any more allocations. Even though you may have plenty of resources, if the accountant doesn't have paper, he can't allocate any more, you know, money in that case.
Right.
The same thing happens with memory. If we don't have enough PTEs, we can't allocate any more memory. So, and I don't want to go on the tangent of kernel memory. I know that you guys have killed that in other shows.
Well, sure, but this whole, you know, why do we still have 32-bit servers out there? Really, it's time to move on. And I've been recommending this with my work in tuning in ASP.NET, is compile your apps as 32-bit, but run them on machines that are running 64-bit, because Windows on Windows works like a hot damn, and debugging running 64-bit does have its own issues, and you can avoid that if you do your compilations correctly.
Well, true that you can run 32-bit on 64-bit and it will work, but still, a lot of applications that are, if it's a server application, you really need to compile it at 64-bit because it's still limited to the 4 gigabytes of address space
right.
on a 64-bit machine. You know, and that's compiled with large address aware to take advantage of that extra memory. Otherwise,
yeah.
It's back in the 2 gigabyte bucket of memory.
And, yeah, in this case, I'm talking about websites. And so my point was, if you need more 4 gigs of RAM for a website, what are you doing?
You'd be surprised, actually.
Well, you might.
True.
Typically, it's that they're doing dumb things with memory, like stuff that just doesn't make sense. If you actually want to scale a website, you won't be storing that much stuff.
Or you'll have an application tier that's separate from your web tier, and so you're running a different system there anyway.
Well, another interesting case that we ran into a while ago was the what I call the phantom hard page fault. And this was a July 2009 post.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something I wanted to do as a call out on the show as well. And, you know, and even because David Solomon, who is one of the co-writers or one of the authors of the Windows Internals book, he mm-hmm. even calls this out in one of his shows. And the point being is that, you know, he goes out and he asks everybody, how do you identify when you're running out of memory? And you just kind of pause there for a long time. And then finally somebody says, oh, pages per second. You know, if you're doing a lot of hard page faults, then you got to be running, you must be running out of memory. And he's like, wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, just totally thrashing him down. And everybody's like, what do you mean wrong? You know, and it really comes down to pages per second is counted, you know, as all the hard page faults. But a hard page fault could be something as simple as a memory mapped file. You know, like, for example, on my case of the phantom hard page fault, we had over like 3,000 pages per second, you know, at peak, but yet available megabytes, which is the amount of RAM available to the system, was over a gig the whole time, at least almost always up to 2 gigabytes in some cases. So what was going on there was their backup software would it does the way it's architected. It says, okay, I'm going to load all these files up in virtual memory. So it thinks that it's in memory. And then when it goes to actually read those, the operating system's like, oops, I don't have that in RAM yet. Does a hard page fault just to read the file into memory.
Right.
So it's not hitting the page file. It's actually just hitting the file that it meant to read in the first place, but it causes a hard page fault, which counts against pages per second.
Right, of course, and it's not that big a deal. When I'm watching memory, I'm watching it from a .NET perspective, so I look at the .NET heap, but that doesn't talk about memory as a whole. That's just what are we playing with for that app.
Right, and you want to look at bytes total. Total bytes in all heaps.
The bytes in all heaps. The big thing when I'm instrumenting that is showing folks, hey, this goes up, and then a garbage collection comes along, and it goes down, and then it goes back up, and then it goes down, and that's normal. That's a heartbeat of a machine, just that pulse of memory gets allocated, memory gets released, especially when we're dealing with ASP.NET, where lots of memory gets allocated and destroyed constantly.
Yes, and you want to compare that to the private bytes of that same process, because that'll tell you whether or not if you have a memory leak condition, if your private bytes is constantly going up, but bytes in all heaps is kind of staying similar or kind of oscillating just a little bit, that should tell you that it's a native leak, something that's non.NET. That's
right.
A leak. Now, and that will eliminate half of your troubleshooting.
Well, more, because often, native leak versus, and there's no reason, you can have memory leaks in .NET too. I've seen it happen where that oscillation is steadily going up. It's still oscillating, but it's always increasing. And that, but just because it's not in .NET doesn't mean it can't be leaking. In fact, it, in some ways, almost more likely to be leaking.
Oh, yeah.
But you're finding that folks are pretty comfortable running all 64-bit now.
Yes, 64-bit should be. And matter of fact, it's so much easier in Windows 7 and Vista. I ran a 64-bit Windows XP box for a while, and half of my applications wouldn't run.
Right.
But on Vista and above, especially on Windows 7, 7's just awesome, by the way. It just runs. I mean, I've had no compatibility problems that I've seen. And I've been trying out this Windows XP mode, virtual PC thing. Mm-hmm. That is slick. I thought it was just like a normal virtual PC, like no big deal. But you can actually say publish this on the Windows 7 box.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you go start and run the application, it looks like it's running natively on Windows 7, but in reality, it's running from the virtual PC.
But those things are still, I got really involved in the Windows 7 launch, and that whole that's really about being able to keep old apps alive. Until you can move it forward. They aren't encouraging it as don't bother moving forward.
Right.
But they're accepting it as a reality of the day.
Yeah.
Right? That you have to do this. It's the only way to get forward.
Yeah. There are some apps out there that aren't going to move and need to be replaced, and that takes time, and you're going to need them both side by side, and here's a way to make that happen.
Exactly. Oh, there's another feature of PAL I wanted to talk about, and it's kind of cool, actually. In the I'm doing counter generation. What that means is that, like, for example, percent network utilization doesn't exist as a performance counter. But yet, I've created it.
Oh, really?
I don't actually create the counter. What I do is I take multiple counters, like bytes total per second and connection bandwidth, or current bandwidth. I take those counters and I run them through the formula of converting the bytes total per second multiplied times 8 to convert it to bits,
right,
and then by 100 and divided by current bandwidth, and that gives me a percentage of network bandwidth that I'm using. And then I create a new counter while PAL is running called percent network utilization. And then I create a chart of it with thresholds and then the data, of course, around that too. But to you as the end user, you wouldn't have known that, you know, that I did that in the background.
Cool. Do the math and get the info.
Well, and most of the time, NICs aren't saturated. It's fairly rare, I find, to find a NIC that's, especially gigabit NICs, that just, okay, I'm full.
Yeah, usually there's a duplex problem or something else that's the NIC problem.
Latency is a big, big killer. And output queue length is the other one that's here as well. That's always right next to it that is showing it. As a matter of fact, the sample I think I gave you, that there was actually a couple spikes of two. Network output queuing of two. So, after running PAL with a lot of customers, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of like the old Spider-Man syndrome, where Spider-Man's like, you know, holy cow, ever since I got my powers, it's like, you know, all these incredible, like, supervillains have come out. Is this my fault for all these supervillains coming out? And what I found is by running PAL in customers' environments, you know, a server that I wouldn't have suspected anything going on, I'm like, holy cow, you know, this is going on this server. And as I go to different customers, I start seeing a trend, you know, with all these different systems. So the tool has really kind of opened my eyes to some issues.
Well, and like you said earlier, it's analysis is hard enough that people don't only do it when there's really a problem. So this idea of routinely monitoring still seems to be a rarity.
Yeah, and I'm encouraging a lot of my customers to analyze this every week. I don't think I can use the customer's names in this.
That's fair.
They haven't given me explicit permission for
this,
but there's some huge customers, I think big time. If I told you the name, you'd be like, oh wow, you know, type of customers. Lots of customers are using this tool. I mean, they've standardized their analysis on this thing. So this is, you know, and it has a lot of grassroots here too, because I'm not the only person behind this thing. We got David Plus, who's actually announcing this at SQL Pass tomorrow. I know that's publishing this later, but he's going to announce this on November 2nd at SQL Pass. And he's like, by the way, PAL 2.0 is coming out, and everybody who does SQL is going to see this. You know, because it's really popularized PAL. We got Mike Legassi, again a rock star at Exchange Performance Analysis. Mm-hmm. We got Kip Grummenberg, who's an AD guy, Matt Reynolds, another guy who does AD and stuff. So we got a lot of great people that know their particular product that are coming out with these great thresholds.
All this data is available. It's always been available. It's available today. All we have to do is take advantage of it.
Exactly. I mean, we've been publishing white papers forever. Heck, I've been doing tons of documentation. By the way, look for this. You know, here's how you do normal, everyday, basic troubleshooting of a server. Yeah. And I even point my customers to the documentation, and they still don't read it. And it's not because they don't want to. It's because they don't have time.
Exactly.
You know, with the economy the way things are today, they're like, you know what, I really want to look at this, but I've got three other critical situations I've got to put out. You know, so having this with a tool that brings things up as a context-sensitive issue. By the way, you know, you don't have to worry about any of this other stuff, but disk I/O, you gotta look at. You know, and giving them prescriptive guidance on how to solve that is really the ticket.
Does the heavy lifting and makes the data usable and helps to filter things down to get out all the crud and allow you to just focus on the information that actually matters. And there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah, focusing on the actionable items. So, exactly.
Well, Clint, I think we're about out of time. Any final words?
Already? Dang it.
Dang it.
I know. I wanted to talk about there's rumor of 128-bit coming out and stuff like that, and I think it's totally ludicrous. So, because x64, I know I have one final word, but x64 is like only like 1% of true 64-bit. True 64-bit is around 17 or 18 exabytes in size, which is huge. So, you know, 64-bit's going to be around for a long time.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think it's a whole other show, man. We'll just have to have you back.
Oh, dude, I got a lot more to talk about.
I bet you do.
Okay. All right, guys. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Clint.
Well, we'll talk to you the next time, then.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.